On the phone line, we have with us Barb Weller. She is an attorney with the Christian Law Association out of Florida. Barb, who's been with CLA since 1995, is especially knowledgeable in the area of the rights of Christians in the public schools of America. And Barb, thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
You know, Barb, there seems to be a lot of confusion on what teachers can and can't do in the public school classrooms when it comes to creation and evolution. Does the law allow instructors to teach creation or intelligent design in the public school classrooms today?
Well, I have a very definitive answer for you, and it is, it all depends. And there are several things that it depends on, and primarily is what the school board will allow. Courts have said that creationism is a religion, but evolution is science. Now, I don't buy that, and there are a lot of other people that don't necessarily buy that. But that's what the courts have said. So if creationism is taught in the schools, then it must be taught as a religion. But that doesn't mean that it cannot be taught at all. Now, there are some other things that that a teacher can do, a biology teacher, for instance, and this is what we recommend, that the teacher teach the pros and cons of evolution. So therefore, you would teach things that the textbook says support evolution, but you would also let the students know which things are fraudulent, which experiments have been conducted that tend to show that evolution wasn't possible, or that there had to be some kind of higher design involved. And that would be the intelligent design concept, of course, but you don't even have to call it that. You can just teach the things that tend to discredit a belief in evolution. So teachers can definitely do that. Another thing that they can do is to do what's called teaching the controversy. So they can teach the students that there is a controversy in the scientific community and in other communities about origins and how things really started and whether there's any religion involved or no religion involved. I mean, you could just take the debate last night amongst the Republican candidates talking about whether or not they believed in creation and why. And so it is a controversy, and it's something that people in society talk about, so a teacher could teach it in that context. The whole key is, what does a school board allow? Some school boards say creation cannot be taught in the classroom at all, and other school boards will say that teaching of all origins, all creation, intelligent design, pros and cons of evolution, that it's all permitted in the classroom. What we recommend that school boards do not do is what the school board did, for instance, in Dover, Pennsylvania, when they got sued by the ACLU, and they were requiring teachers to teach certain things about creation. You can't require it, but you can permit it.
Unfortunately, the climate today is, well, let me give you an example of someone I know in Central Oregon who is a science teacher in a public school. He assured me many times he did not teach creation in school or brought up intelligent design. All he did was bring up the problems with the evolutionary worldview, and that was enough to get him fired. Are you seeing that more and more?
No, but it has the same answer. It depends. And what it depends upon is what the school board allows. So the whole key to everything that we're probably going to be talking about today is the school board. And that's why the bottom line basic thing that any community has to do is to make sure that they get good people elected to the school board, because this is an elective office. We work with school board members all the time, suggesting policies to them and things that do permit this type of thing to be taught in the classroom. I mean, really, in my mind, when I speak with people about this issue, it seems to me that, for the most part, it's the evolutionists who have the religious belief, because they don't want anybody to even suggest anything contrary to what their doctrine and their faith is in evolution. Any scientific theory has to be open to attack. I mean, that's what science is all about. You throw a theory up, you know, you run a theory up the flagpole, and then everybody shoots at it with their own opinions or experimentation or research or whatever they have, and then you see if it holds up. But because scientists don't really, I guess, believe that their evolutionary theory can hold up to that sort of thing, there are many educators in the scientific community who say, we're not going to permit any kind of negative attacks or statements about evolution in the classroom. And then if the school board goes along with that in any given district, what you said happened to this person that you had heard about, it really can happen, but it doesn't have to happen. There's no legal reason for it to happen. It's just a political question of whether a school board is going to fully educate his students or just basically brainwash them with an evolutionary theory that really doesn't hold up to scientific inquiry.
Well, let's talk more in general now about the rights of Christians in America's public schools. And as you said, many times it's a board-by-board or maybe even a state-by-state matter. But generally, can a Christian teacher share his or her faith in a public school in America?
And once again, it depends on how they're going to do that. Any Christian teacher is permitted to teach about religion in the classroom in an academic and neutral manner, as part of the general curriculum. What a teacher is not permitted to do is to interact in a devotional or proselytizing way with students. So that's where the court has drawn the line. And so a Christian teacher cannot share his own or her own faith in the classroom, even if the discussion is about a book. Well, or let's say talking about Martin Luther King, and an English class might be reading Martin Luther King's speeches. And, of course, he has a lot of religious imagery in those speeches. So it would be quite appropriate for the teacher to take the religious imagery in those speeches and talk about its context in the Bible in an academic and neutral kind of way, not promoting Christianity or telling students that, you know, they need to be saved, but just educating them about the Bible. I mean, the Bible is one of the most important books in Western civilization, and students should be familiar with it. They should know what's in there. They should know what people believe about it. But at the end of any kind of a discussion like that, the students should not know what the teacher's personal faith is. So that anything that the teacher does with respect to religion in the classroom does need to be academic and neutral and part of the curriculum. To take it to the other end of the spectrum, there was a case in New York several years ago where a teacher was praying with a student, an elementary school student. The student had had a friend who had died in a car accident, and the student had actually, after school, come in and asked the teacher to pray with her because she was upset about her friend having been killed. The teacher, who was a Christian, was praying with the student in the classroom after school. Another teacher walked by the door, saw the two of them praying together in the classroom, reported the teacher to the principal. The teacher was fired, filed a lawsuit, and lost. In other words, the court said that the school had a legitimate reason to fire this teacher who had been praying with a student, even though the student asked. It was after school. There were no other students around. So teachers do have to be careful. But one thing we always stress, too, is that it's different in different localities. Here in Florida, in some school systems, that would be welcome. No principal would ever object if a teacher was praying with a student who had lost a friend or something like that. But in New York, or maybe, you know, Massachusetts or California or Illinois or some of the places where religion isn't quite as popular as it is here in Florida and some other Bible Belt states, the teacher got in trouble and the law didn't hold it up. So generally speaking, unless you know that the atmosphere in your own school is something different, teachers should stick to teaching religion as an academic and neutral subject, shouldn't share their own faith with their students, and for sure should not engage in any kind of devotional or proselytizing activities with students, because that's what the court cases in the 60s were all about, just taking devotional Bible reading and prayer out of the public schools, but not taking, and the cases specifically said this, that they were not taking religion or the Bible out of schools as an academic subject.
For the past few minutes, we've been talking about teachers. What about students in public schools reading the Bible during school hours or praying during school hours? What insights can you share with us there?
Well, this is where the good news comes in, because as much as teachers are not permitted to do it, students are. And let me just give you a little background on this and kind of the legal reasons why all this is the case. A teacher is paid by the government. That didn't used to be the case. Prior to 1940s, 1950s of the last century, teachers were always considered to be what was legally called in loco parentis. In other words, a teacher fulfilled the role of the parent while the child was in school. But somewhere around the 40s, 50s, 60s, that began to shift. And as the federal government became more and more involved in education, teachers are now considered to be agents of the government. And that puts them in a completely different place. Because as an agent of the government, they can violate the Establishment Clause. If they were merely agents of the parents, as they had been prior to about the 1950s, you couldn't violate the Establishment Clause because only the government can violate the Establishment Clause. It says you can't establish any religion. And since about 1947, the legal shorthand for violation of the Establishment Clause or upholding the Establishment Clause is called separation of church and state. That's where that phrase is kind of interwoven into the Constitution, is that courts have said that the Establishment Clause means there has to be a separation of church and state. Now, I don't believe that, and I don't think our founders believe that, but that's what the courts say today. So therefore, a teacher has to maintain that separation of church and state because a teacher is a paid agent of the government. So that's why teachers have all these restrictions on them as far as what they can do in the classroom or in the school with regard to religion. But a student is a totally different thing. A student is not a paid agent of the government. A student is a consumer of a government product, a consumer of the educational product of the government. And as a consumer of an educational product, the courts have said that a student has free speech rights and free exercise rights in public school. Therefore, a student must be permitted to discuss religion in public school, to pray in public school, to complete assignments in public school with a religious theme. All the rights that teachers have lost because they've become agents of the government, students still retain because the government must permit the students to have free speech rights while they're in school.
But even then, there are exceptions to that. If some students who might want to, during a commencement exercise, talk about their Christian faith, sometimes the schools have tried to stop that. Has that been successfully defended in the courts?
Yes. If a student is selected on some neutral ground, like the student is the valedictorian or the salutatorian of the class, the student is permitted, has the free speech right, to talk about God and religion in the speech. Generally speaking, and this has not been litigated, but generally speaking, when we're giving students advice about what to do in their commencement speech, we'll say, just don't be devotional or proselytizing. In other words, at the end of your commencement address, don't have an altar call. You know, we definitely, you know, advise them not to do that. But if they want to thank Jesus, if they want to say, Jesus helped me in every class, and I thank God for my teachers, and I plan to live my life for Christ, the student can give any kind of testifying like that that they want to in the speech, as long as they don't say, you all should do that too. You all should live your lives for Jesus as well. So that's where the line would be for that type of commencement speech. So, yes, students generally have more rights than they realize, and for sure they have more rights than most schools realize. I would say of all the calls that we get where we are able to successfully defend, it would be in this area where schools and teachers just don't realize that they're required to give students these free speech rights to talk about religion.
The Christian Law Association is involved in a wide variety of cases related to the religious liberty of Christians. When it comes to the area of education, what kind of cases have you been involved in recently?
Well, I was just doing an email right before I picked up the phone for this interview. And the question was, a teacher who was being disciplined because she was reading the Bible on her own personal time. This is an issue that we sometimes get, and we've talked about it before, how much can teachers do? And we were discussing it from the concept of how much can teachers do with the students, but there's another side to that. And the other side to that is, what can teachers do with other teachers or when students are not around? And that's a whole different question, because that's where teachers' rights come into play. So if two teachers want to talk about the Lord, or they want to pray together in the faculty lounge outside the view of students, or if a teacher wants to keep a Bible in their desk and when they're having lunch alone in their classroom, they like to do their devotional reading for the day, they're permitted to do that because there are no students involved. It's just the teacher alone or the teacher with other teachers. So teachers do have those kind of rights in the classroom. And so we're often involved in situations where teachers want to have prayer meetings in the faculty lounge before or after school, or they want to read their Bibles in the classroom, and that's all okay. We just tell them they can't keep the Bible on top of the desk unless they happen to be doing some kind of curriculum activity where the students would have to use the Bible as a reference for their academic work. But otherwise, they could just keep it in a drawer, and then when they're alone in the classroom, they can read it. So that was one that I just happened to do this morning. I would say the biggest one that we do, though, relates to what we were just talking about a minute ago, and that is students who want to bring religion into their assignments. So, for instance, a teacher will tell a second or third grade class, bring your favorite book to school to read to your classmates. And we've had this happen, a child might bring in a story about Noah or a story about Adam and Eve, and the teacher should permit the child to read that book because it's the child's book and it's the child's free speech right. They have a right to fulfill that assignment with a religious theme if they like to. We've gotten calls from parents where maybe the teachers ask a question in class and they've said, you know, who's one of your heroes? And little first grader said Noah, and the teacher said, oh, we can't talk about Noah in the classroom. Well, that's not true. The teacher asked a legitimate, neutral question, and a child answered with a religious answer. That's fine. Children have those rights in school. For instance, let's get back to the whole creation issue. If a student in a 10th grade biology class, for instance, if one of the assignments that a teacher gives is for students to choose a topic to write a paper on, and the student chooses a topic with a creation theme, that's perfectly fine. As a matter of fact, we tell teachers who want to get this theme into their classrooms, we say bring it in through the students. Give them a free choice of topics for an assignment, and if they choose to write about creation, they can even share their information with the class. If they're doing a project and all the projects are being shared with the rest of the students, they can share those scientific things about creation in the classroom because then it's the student doing it and not the teacher. So that's, I would say that is probably the primary one that we do. We get a lot of questions, amazingly, about the Equal Access Act and Bible clubs in public schools, and that was passed by Congress back in 1989, and there still are schools that are trying to keep the Bible clubs out of the schools. And so that's another one. That's pretty easy because there have been so many court cases on it now that generally only takes one letter or one phone call to the school board attorney to get that one resolved. But those, I would say, would be the three biggest issues. What can the teachers do amongst each other? What can the students do with regard to assignments? Let's say it's a talent show, and this was a case recently in New Jersey where a student wanted to sing a religious song in a school talent show, and they weren't going to permit her to do that. And the court said, yes, she had a free speech right to sing a religious song in the talent show. So, and then the Bible club issues, those are the key things that we've been working on lately with regard to religion and school issues.
I'd like you to address a trend that seems to be increasing. In fact, I saw it in California years ago when I lived there. The fact that some curricula would be promoting, perhaps even trying to normalize, homosexual lifestyles. Is that growing? And if so, what can Christians do to counteract what is certainly anti-biblical behavior?
That is something that really is growing, and it is one of the major reasons why many parents decide to pull their children out of public schools and put them into Christian schools, because it really is, you know, ever since public education started in this country, which was right about the time of the Civil War, one of the purposes of public education has always been to indoctrinate children, and I would say between, you know, 1850 and 1990, the indoctrination was mainly to make them good Americans, and during many of those years, the traits to be a good American were the same traits as to be a good Christian. And so there really wasn't much of a conflict between the indoctrination that was taking place in the public schools and, you know, the general thing that most people in society believed. As immigrants would come in and go into the public schools, they were indoctrinated with Christian principles of honesty and you know, just all the good character traits that we think about when we think about Americans and when we think about Christians. All that changed around 1990, and the whole concept of indoctrination didn't change. Public schools still exist to try and indoctrinate people into believing what the society wants them to believe, but unfortunately now, what the National School Board Association, the National Education Association, what they want to indoctrinate students with now in the public schools is the acceptance of the homosexual lifestyle. That's a stated goal of theirs. They pass resolutions about it in their meetings. They don't care what us, and I don't know how old you are, but I'm a little older, and they don't care what I think about homosexuality, whether I accept it or not. Their goal is to indoctrinate children into accepting this as a normal and natural lifestyle. And so you can see this even in all the polls that are taken, that the younger the people are who are being polled, the more likely they are to see homosexuality as a normal lifestyle and as something that should be accepted in the culture. And that is one of the goals of the public schools, to do that in indoctrinating. And so as students are growing up in the schools more and more with this, that is happening. And as kids are coming out of high schools now, they are coming out more indoctrinated into this belief that homosexuality is fine. And they've really been following the Black Civil Rights Movement in all of this, because there was a time in America when we made that shift between thinking that the person was a bad person if they didn't accept integration and if they didn't accept people of all ethnicities and colors on the same basis. Now, we know that's a Christian trait, so really that kind of acceptance didn't conflict with Christian beliefs. But now what's happening is, in the schools, they're indoctrinating kids into thinking that people are bad people, their parents are bad people, anybody in community is a bad person if they don't accept a homosexual on the same basis as anybody else. And that is a problem, because that is a deviation from the Christian lifestyle, but it still is an indoctrination in the public schools. And here again, the whole key is the school board. Because it doesn't matter what the National School Board Association thinks. It doesn't matter what the National Education Association thinks. It matters what the school board thinks. And if the school board's goal is to keep that kind of stuff out of the schools, it will stay out no matter what those other national organizations think. But if the school board has that goal, that same goal of indoctrination that these national groups have, then it will come in. So there again, the gatekeeper is the school board, and I just don't think that communities pay enough attention to who they're electing to serve on the school board for all of these reasons.
So if Christians are going to counteract the so-called normalization of homosexuality, of course they can vote, but also appear at school board meetings?
Well, it's more important to vote than to appear. I mean, yes, they can appear and they can express their viewpoint, but if the school board has a genuine desire for this kind of indoctrination, they'll smile and nod and nothing will change. So the voting is really more important. And of course, with the voting, you've got to have good Christian people who are willing to go out and run for the local school board so that other good Christians have somebody to vote for. We work with a lot of school boards in many states, and we've really seen the difference. I mean, in states where the community really purposes to get good Christian people on the school board who want to, you know, who have a care for the welfare of the students, then these things are not coming into the schools. But that has to be a purposeful thing that a community does. And in most times when I talk with people on the phone, because they call me because they're concerned about this issue or the creation issue or, you know, any issue, I ask them if they know what the school board feels about it. And in most cases, I would say 99.9% of the cases, the people I'm talking to don't even know the names of the people who represent their community on the school board. And yet I tell them that it is more important for a parent who has a child in the public schools to have good people on the school board than it is, I mean, as far as their children are concerned, it doesn't matter who the president of the United States is. What affects their children's lives every day, day to day, hour to hour, is who is serving on that school board. That is the most important thing. I would say that if a community were to say you can only vote for one elective office and that's it. You know, you're only allowed one. The one would not be the president. The one would be the school board.
Homeschooling. And I would say a good chunk of the supporters of Answers in Genesis and also readers of our Answers magazine are homeschooling families. I've heard of many instances in Europe where homeschooling rights are being diminished. Are we seeing that in America? And maybe I should ask the question first, is homeschooling legal in all 50 states?
Homeschooling is legal in all 50 states, but that is not to say that every state is as friendly toward homeschooling as others. And there are some states that that don't, like California doesn't specifically authorize homeschooling, but yet families can get around that by registering themselves as small private schools. So they can, I mean, there have been some problems with this, but I would say California is probably the worst state as far as the homeschooling laws go. Other states have different laws for how you can do it, but for the most part, you know, it's accepted, and sometimes you register with the school board as a homeschooler. Some states don't even care if you're homeschooling. You just don't have any contact with the local schools at all. But there's some, you know, there's a mix of laws in each state, and so anybody who's going to homeschool should definitely find out what their particular state law says about it and the legal way to go about it. But so far, thank God, we are not having the kind of situation, for instance, that they had in Germany, where a homeschooled child was actually removed from the home and put in a mental institution because they were being homeschooled. That, we do not see that happening in America at this point in time. But here again, as school boards are very important for what goes on in the public schools, the key for homeschooling is state legislation with regard to homeschools and how the state sees that. And so those states that have very active and very knowledgeable homeschool parent associations who lobby their legislatures and who make sure that they get the best deal, so to speak, with legislation regarding homeschool, they're the ones who do the best. And so just as you need to pay attention to who's on the school board, particularly if you're a homeschool parent, you need to pay attention to what laws your state has passed with regard to how homeschooling can be conducted. And it's a really good civic exercise, and really a lot of homeschool families do this when the legislature is in session and they know that a bill or something's being considered that concerns homeschooling. They'll just take the whole family and go lobby. And generally speaking, legislators are very impressed with these homeschool kids and their families because they're usually nicely dressed and they comport themselves very well. And legislators are usually pretty impressed. And so the families stay there and lobby, and they make sure that they don't go home until the bills are passed and signed by the governor. And that really is the best way to get good homeschool laws in a particular state.
Barb, let's end on a positive note. We've been talking the last few minutes about all sorts of assaults on Christian themes in our public schools. Our public schools are certainly very different than they were 30, 40 years ago. But give us some good examples of how the Christian Law Association is stemming the tide, if you will, against some of these anti-Christian sentiments.
Well, one of the key things to do is for churches to use their kids, their public school kids, as missionaries to the public schools. And it's amazing how they rise to that task. I mean, the best way to bring morals and to bring religion into the public schools is through the Christian students. So we really encourage youth pastors, any pastors, to train their youth to go into the public schools and start Bible clubs and learn how to evangelize their peers, learn how to bring these things into their public school. For instance, we suggest in schools, once again, to bring it back to the creation issue, we suggest that if there's a school that does not permit creation to be taught in any way, shape, or form, that the Bible club bring in a speaker, maybe from Answers in Genesis, maybe from another creation group, a scientific creation speaker, as a guest in their Bible club meeting, because probably once a month, or they say occasionally, you can bring in outside speakers into a school Bible club. So the Bible club could invite a speaker to come in, and then they could invite the whole school to attend the meeting. So you really would have the option, and this has happened in several cases, where the Bible Club is sponsoring a program, bringing in a creation speaker, advertising it. They can advertise it like any school club could advertise a special meeting. Sometimes they're expecting a big audience, so they'll even use the school auditorium for that particular meeting. But they can bring in those kinds of things through the Bible Club. The students can evangelize one another. They can pray together. They can talk about religion. So really, the students are the best missionaries for bringing in Christianity and values into the public school. So I would say that parents and churches that have children who are in the public schools should really see them as missionaries and should train them to be missionaries and should encourage them to see what an important role they have. So that's one thing that we really encourage. I know my husband's a pastor, and we had a youth pastor at our church one time whose wife was actually a teacher in the public schools, and she was in middle school, and she was kind of afraid that her middle school students would not be able to rise to this task and would not be able to really present the Christian message to the other students. And we said, no, just give them a chance, you know, train them at church on Sunday and send them out into the schools and see how they do. And they were just amazed at how, when the students realized that they were the only people who could take, they were the natives, they're the natives in the Christians or in the public schools, they're the only people that can really take the Christian message into the public schools. And so when they're elevated to that status of missionary and they're trained to do that, they really do rise to the occasion. We had a first grader in Tennessee years ago. This was probably 10 years ago. Her daddy was a big soul winner, and she wanted to be a soul winner. And by the end of the year, she had converted. She had every child in her class was saved, and she was holding Bible studies and teaching these kids at recess every day about the Bible. And she was only in the first grade, and she was teaching her other little first grade friends and then taking them to her church on a Sunday. So kids are the best way to bring this in. Voluntary elective Bible courses can be taught in the schools if they're done in the right way as academic subjects. Teachers can bring character into the classroom. They can bring Christian values into the classroom through English classes and through civics classes and through other academic classes where they can teach this as academic material. And once again, I just hate to, you know, to be a Johnny One Note here, but the key way to keep morality and to keep schools safe and to promote the well-being of the students is to pay a lot of attention to who is on the school board, because they hire the superintendents, they hire the principals, they set the policies that the school runs by. And the most important elective office for parents with children in public schools is the school board. So that, as I said, I hate to keep singing the same song, but it's the best song I've got. And when you see, as we do, when you work with school boards who are primarily Christian and who do primarily want to keep these values in the public schools, it's just amazing how those schools are so much better than the ones where that's not happening.
That's an important point to keep stressing, that it is a board-to-board difference across the country. And so if you're going to make a difference in the culture, you do it at the local level first, at a grassroots level.
And one other thing I'll just mention is there's a church in Dallas, Texas, that was looking around their community. It was an inner-city community, and they saw failing schools, families disintegrating. And so they decided as a church to adopt a school. Now, they cannot proselytize the students in the school because they're kind of an official part of the school, but what they do is they go and help the families. They go into the schools and they play basketball with the kids, and they, you know, men go in and they mentor these boys in these inner city high schools. And even though they're doing more what I would call maybe social welfare work than actually evangelism, they are still having a great effect on their community, and it does kind of branch out from there, so that, you know, these kids know where these people are coming from, and if they show up for church on a Sunday or the family gets saved or something, that's a nice side effect. Obviously, they can't have that purpose when they go into the school, but it is a movement that's also spreading, particularly in inner city schools where a church can adopt a school and, you know, tutoring and helping the family with food or whatever they need. And they do it with the love of Christ, even though they don't necessarily say that. It comes across. So there are lots of good programs going on now, and these are the things that we really have to encourage.
Well, some positive notes to end on, and we want to thank Barb Weller for being with us. She is one of the attorneys for the Christian Law Association out of Florida. We've had a long-time friendship with the Gibbs, father and son, and we appreciate the partnership we've had with you over the years. And thank you for being with us, Barb.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure. And just getting this information out to people the way you do is just a wonderful blessing.